Good evening, everybody. James McKinney here with My Science Hour. This is for December 28th, 2023, the last show of the year. And a very interesting topic popped up this week in the news, in the general news, saw it in a few different places, dealing with Saturn's rings, something that I've dealt with my entire career. Had a peer-reviewed published paper on this exact topic. They're called the spokes in Saturn rings, so I'll be talking about that. So by the end of this show, you'll be equally an expert, much more than NASA scientists, because they don't know after all of these many decades. By the way, my peer-reviewed published paper, you can go look it up. It's called Saturn's Sweeper Moons Predicted by J.M. McKinney. 1980, Department of Mathematics, Cornell University is the attribute, the association, the affiliation that's in the article. And there I actually predicted the spokes and what causes them. So isn't it quite amazing that here we are in 2023 and the guys over at Goddard and JPL still scratching body parts trying to figure out what's going on there. Anyway, I'll be talking about that. But first, a little bit of a topic here while talking to some other people. And I know all of you have this same situation. All of you. If you have a strong personality, or if you're, it could be in the family, it could be in a workplace, it could be, you know, where you go to the gym, it could be, hard to say. But you run into people who are kind of much bigger than what they should be, let's put it that way. Or there are people, and in the case, I'll just give you an update on the case, the result, that's revolving around what I've been dealing with a little bit here, nothing serious, but people who play video games. And now people may have these different issues, but people who play video games, it's like they've analyzed people, their brain waves, etc. And what's a video game? It's like these flick controllers, and you know, I've never done that, so I really haven't, you know, I wouldn't know how to push the little levers or push the little buttons to make do whatever it does. But there are people who have spend entire nights doing this, not just a night now and then, but every night, burning up their lives with playing video games. And but here's the other issue, is that they become what I call vacuous spirits. In other words, if you're around a person with a really lively spirit, everybody's attracted to that. Everybody is like, you know, they come into a room and it's like a light bulb going on. Everybody is like, it just affects you and makes you feel good because they bring in so much joy and happiness and their spirit. But to the opposite side of that, people who walk into the room with a vacuous spirit suck the goodness out of everybody else. And it happened to me where I was like going, what's going on? I'm kind of like, you know, disoriented here. And then I realized, holy cow, you know, that this person is literally draining my energy, the spiritual and mental, whatever, energy. And so anyway, I don't want to talk about my situation. I want to talk about your situation. If you're involved with something like this, and it can be a family member, it can be people who are codependent that you see in your life that have this codependent relationship, you know, you know, where you have the dominant person and then the subjected, subdominant person, and they interact and they cannot break this cycle. It could be, like I say, just an individual who has lost their personality to through video games, or it could be drugs, because the video games have the exact same effect as drugs. Serious drugs. I'm talking about heroin and things like that, where people just completely lose it. Video games do the same thing, and the people, it actually like sucks the life out of their spirit. They become, like I say, the term I use is vacuous spirits. And so the question is, in talking to a friend of mine who's let's just say he's knowledgeable, has some experience dealing with these kind of situations, is that you have to, first of all, withdraw yourself, and then you have to become strong. You have to be confident in yourself, and then that somewhat cures the situation. And then surround yourself with really positive, dynamic people, people who are building their life into the future, creating things, and have that positive spirit. All of those things are the kind of people that you want to be around. And so anyway, I could go on and on about this subject, but just if you have people like this in your life, don't let them suck you dry. Don't let them, you just can't be around them. That's really the ultimate thing. But sometimes they're like family members. And so what do? But you have to extract yourself and find a way to basically neutralize their effect on you, or just get away from it, whatever it takes. But anyway, I think it's important because we live in a world, in fact, this is the bigger subject. We live in a world today where there, especially with world leaders, congressmen, senators, mayors, could be judges, could be other people that look and dress, they put on that suit, they put on that robe if they're a judge, they put on that that facade that makes them look official. But really, they are just consumed with, in some cases, literally with demons. And that can take on a lot of different forms also. And, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here. But we're living in a world where a lot of what goes on, whether it's the news media, whether it's the world of science, which I'm involved in, and very much involved with people who are atheists, people who believe they understand how the world and universe began, and it's really all ridiculous, like say the Big Bang, or the, solar system was created 4.5 billion years ago, all in a puff of smoke. You're dealing with people, or just say comet science, something that I deal a lot with is comet science. The European Space Agency has landed on a comet nucleus, an active comet nucleus that's supporting a tail, has a water tail, has all the attributes of a comet. But they land on a nucleus, and there's no water, there's no ice, there's no snowballs, there's nothing venting off of the comet nucleus. There's not a molecule of water, H2O, within 10 kilometers of the nucleus. Yet they still call it a dirty snowball. Bizarre situations, or you find people, especially hovering around the universities, that just live in this la-la land. This make-believe land that they've somehow created, and it, then they push this off onto the students. And I've often said recently, because I spent 10 years of my life teaching at the university level, math, physics, computer science, and astronomy. I taught those courses at the university level, and over a period of about 10 years in terms of mathematics. I taught every level of mathematics. For undergraduate mathematics, teaching university level mathematics, engineering mathematics, higher levels of math analysis, of topology, all of these courses I taught. But that was long ago when universities still had some semblance of recognizability as a seat of knowledge. Now they're just bastions of Looney Tune goofiness. And so, anyway, but you look at almost any endeavor in today's world, and it's packed with Looney Tunes. And then you have people walking around living in this complete fantasy world. There's kind of a funny joke. This guy was an American guy, and he went over to Sweden apparently, and he found this beautiful young lady and married her. And so for their honeymoon, they got married, of course, over there. And for their honeymoon, they flew into Los Angeles and went directly to Disney World. And they stayed in Disney World. And after about the third or fourth day, finally, the young bride says to the husband, he says, "Is the entire United States like this?" And then he realized, oh my goodness, she doesn't understand. This is not what the United States is like. He took her to Disney World, the most fantasy world place, with people running around Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and the Cinderella and all of the Disney characters, Mickey Mouse running around, jumping up and down. And that was her view of the United States until finally the guy realized, oh my goodness, what have I done? But anyway, the reality is in the United States right now is that it's almost like some kind of Disney World, some kind of fantasy world. It just nothing makes any sense. Alice in Wonderland, going down the rabbit hole and up is down and big is small and small is big and nothing makes any sense. Lewis and Carroll novel on Alice in the Looking Glass, seeing the world through this bizarre looking glass. Anyway, but that's what it's like today in the United States. It's just bizarro land, and people have these concepts. You just go, where on earth did they come up with this stuff? Anyway, a little bit of a diversion from this, but back to the scientific world where, it is so bizarre based on, just if you followed my work, you read my books or whatever, and if you haven't, you should. But let's go back to the origin of the basic theories that are still being propounded in science today, the origin of man, the origin, evolution of man supposedly from monkeys, the evolution of the solar system from a cloud of dust, the evolution of the universe from a big bang. The ideas that are still held as the foundation of science, there's really no scientific basis for them at all. It's just that they have been in place and nobody is able to upset the apple cart that's in the system of university education or NASA or publication, peer-reviewed publications dealing with science. Everything has to stay the same because the rule is that if it was published in a peer-reviewed journal, then it's correct science. It has been administered, it's been reviewed by peers for pure 100% correctness. And the thing I point out on my welcoming note on my webpage is that what if, and this is really true, it's not a what if, it is, all of the basis for modern science is just completely wacko. There's, all of the journals are filled with derivations and implications of extrapolations from these certain basic principles, which are totally false. The Big Bang. It's the most ridiculous thing that the entire universe and all its organization began from this pin size, smaller than pin size, where all the matter in the universe was there and it exploded. And now, billions of years later, here you are walking around reading the newspaper on Earth. What could be wrong with that? I mean, get serious. Get serious, boys and girls. What a joke. What an absolute joke. But, anyway, I could go on and on. The whole idea of, say, the Nobel Prize, something that people would consider the highest echelon of knowledge. If something is given a Nobel Prize, then certainly it had to have been moved through the ringer, through the gauntlet of scientific endeavor, and okayed and reviewed and put on this sanctimonium platter and lifted up to actually receive a Nobel Prize. And a lot of them, dealing with cosmology especially, are just completely false. Couldn't possibly be true. Even in your wildest imagination, peel back the onion layer, just one layer, and the Big Bang could not possibly be true. The redshift that they use to justify the Big Bang is not due to stuff moving away from us. It's due to local electrical conditions around stars. I'm not going to go through all the details here, but that's in my work. And then the so-called microwave background radiation is not due to the Big Bang residue of the energy that was, emitted by the Big Bang billions of years ago. No, it's due to a cloud of dust and gas that surrounds our solar system. And you can see a cloud of dust and gas around other stars near us with a similar microwave signature. And so the big pillars that the Big Bang sit on, the so-called data, the supporting data, is just vacuous. It peel back the first onion layer and it doesn't work. Yet it is propounded as like only, as sanctity next to godliness. In fact, that's what it does. It replaces a creator, a designer, in the grand scheme of things in the universe. That's what it does, and that's that's the biggest thing that it has to do, because science today is atheistic. That this all of this exists, and there's nothing there. There's, if you can't put a meter on it, then it doesn't exist. So the human spirit, the soul, whatever you want to call this entity, the spiritual entity that goes along with the human body and free will, according to these modern science, that simply doesn't exist. It's a figment of your imagination. So anyway, just a little bit of discussion there. But back to the situation in the world as we close out this year and go into the next year. It seems that every year is crazier than the one before. Not even possible. Yet it does. It hits new levels, new heights of craziness. And, just when you thought it couldn't get any crazier, it does. Okay. So what does one do? Do you start throwing the television set out the window? Do you, just like this, when I was growing up, I had a friend, and his dad was an avid baseball fan of, professional baseball. And sometimes because there was no TV there, the games were not, when I was young, real young, the games were not posted on television, they were on the radio. And so if things got too out of hand and the hometown team was losing and just doing, stupid things, my friend's dad would take the radio and throw it down the steps as if that was going to help anything. But, just showing the level of frustration that this guy had, because I think he was a potential professional baseball player contender that, like most people in that position, never made it. But just upset him so much when hearing that the local team was losing, through the radio, unplugged it from the wall and threw the radio down the steps. And that's when they made radios in pretty solid, because then it'd pick it up and go up, plug it back in, and it would work again. Anyway, but we live in this world where it's just to the point where what do? Do you take the computer, the TV, the whatever laptop, and throw it out the window? Or how do you manage this? And actually, the answer is you have to step back, because if I look in my own relatively short lifetime, when I was young, this is well over 50 years ago, I was living in Mexico, in Mexico City. And, at that time, there was the Vietnam War going on, Nixon, all of the other stuff, post 1960s, early 1970s, all this stuff going on in the United States, the protests, the moon landings that turned out to be not so landing, but all of this stuff going on, and I decided that, I'm not even in the United States. Why would I pay attention? But there were people that I knew that, oh, gee, this happened and this happened. And so I just tuned it out, and I lived completely out of the United States, and without, and then here we are 50 years later or more, and more than 50 years later, and the same thing's going on. It's just a different story. It's a different news article, different craziness. So the end result is that this is going to go on, this craziness. So don't get all wrapped up in it. Don't, in fact, that's what they want. They want you to pay attention to this. That's why they have the evening news. The evening news is all about the stock market and the job crisis and the housing crisis and the crisis in the Middle East and the crisis with Russia and the Ukraine and the crisis with climate change. Good grief. Crisis, crisis, crisis. And that's what they want everybody focused on. And then there's the division, the division of groups, mother against daughter, father against son, mother against son, father against daughter, cousin against cousin, brother against brother, brother against sister, and tell it everything is divisive and turned upside down. Everybody's, factions and groups all encounter, defund the police, no support the police. Everything is, pick a topic. There's divisiveness going on around these topics. So, this is, like I've said before, this is the Communist Manifesto. You come into a country, just turn it upside down, inside out, make everybody jumping up and down about every other thing that possible. And that country is easy, slim pickings, easy pickings to destroy. It's the destruction of a country. And it's just pick a topic, and you will find that it's, there are 10 divisions looking at the same issue and all colliding. That's the Communist Manifesto at work. And so the United States is coming apart at the seams. So the only way you can live through this, it would be like maybe 100 or 150 AD in old Rome. There was, when the Roman Empire was growing, in and around the time of Christ, and then afterwards when it was continued to grow, this empire was expanding, but then it started to corrode and collapse. The family unit broke apart. The morality, everything else that, we know the destruction. It took 100 years, 150 years probably, for the Roman Empire, that was at its peak, to finally go completely under, and be dispersed and completely come unraveled. So the people that do that were using the same techniques then as they're using today in the United States and Europe and Northern Europe. And there are some countries that are resisting this, and they will probably be the powerful countries in the future. All they have to do is withstand this onslaught for maybe 10 years, until the Western civilizations totally collapse. But what are you going to do living in that society? Well, good luck. But if you become overly your life becomes overly oppressed from all of this, then you're going to be, washed down the river with the rest of the problems of everybody. Okay, so anyway, I hope you understand the message there as we end this year and head into the next year, which is going to be crazier than the current year, which was crazier than the year before, which was crazier than the year before that one. Yeah. And you know when this is going on, because take, for example, the Ukraine war, front page news, daily analysis from behind the lines, Putin this, or the United States that, or whatever. Then one day, boom, it stopped. Then all of a sudden, it was the Israeli war, and the Gaza thing, and that's what's currently going on. But the Ukraine war, the news on that just hit a brick wall one day. Why? Because 95% of the people weren't listening anymore. It was down to probably 70 or 60 or maybe 50% of the people were paying attention. They didn't have your attention anymore, so whammo, here comes the news story. Ooh, you better listen to that one. The COVID thing, same thing. It was in the news daily. Oh, maximum concern. The pandemic, social distance, the shot, on and on. Schools out of session. Parents, what are they going to do? You can't go to work. All the whole thing. And then one day, boom, it wasn't capturing the public attention anymore. So boom, it got replaced with something else, the Ukraine war. Anyway, if you can't see through this facade, then buddy, ma'am, you just, like I say, jump in the river and go down the river with the wash down the river with everybody else. Okay. Now I'm going to switch to Saturn, one of our most beautiful planets, probably the most beautiful planet, with its bright ring system, with its bands, with its storm systems, if you get up close, with its many, many moons that are interspersed in the rings, etc. Jupiter's a beautiful planet, but really, Jupiter and Saturn are not planets, they're little stars. They are small, unlit stars. So, how many planets are there? We've got Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. Jupiter's not a planet, it's a star. It's the twin brown dwarf companion of our sun. Saturn is a little unlit star, unlit in the visible spectrum. It's very bright in the infrared, and three times brighter than Jupiter for the amount of heat that it receives from the sun. So it's giving off heat, an internal heat source, which is fusion. So it has active fusion going on in its atmosphere, driving those winds, etc. And then you go out, and so Uranus and Neptune and Pluto is a planet, by the way. So we used to say there's nine planets, but you take away Jupiter and Saturn, which are not planets, they're small stars, you have seven planets. And yes, Pluto is a planet, but then now, by the way, there are about 1,000 planets that are Pluto size, and that's why they had to demote Pluto as a planet, because they had to come up with some kind of definition of a planet. And the different definition they came up with was, does it gravitationally clear out the region of space where it travels? And of course, little Pluto does not. And in a sense, none of the planets really do that very well. Earth and Mars, you could say that they do to a degree. But here's a quandary with that definition. If you took Pluto and you put it where Earth was, and you put Earth where Pluto was, then Earth would not be a planet. Well, wait a minute. Earth is big. It's got people living on it. I would say it's a planet, whether it's out by where Pluto's orbit is or it's where it is now, wouldn't you say? And if you take Pluto way out in the outer solar system and bring it into where Earth is, it would qualify to be a planet. So is it a planet or not? Earth would be a planet because you still got people living on it. Be pretty cold, but still, Earth would qualify as a planet if you put it out where Pluto is, even though it was not clearing out the region of space where it orbits. So anyway, but the reason they made that phony definition of planets is so that they could dissociate from Pluto, because here's what happened. In their automated search routines with the bigger and the better telescopes, they started finding planets. Sedna was the first one, I believe. It was called Sedna. Michael Brown, Caltech, or University of California, one of those, was a grad student looking at automated search, and they started discovering these planets. And so then they continued the search until they found literally thousands of planets that are Pluto size and bigger. So they had a quandary. They had to look at this and say, well, if Pluto's a planet, then all of a sudden we got a little problem. We've been telling these people in the textbooks since they were in kindergarten that there's nine planets, Pluto being one of them. And if there's other planets out there that are the same size as Pluto or bigger, then wouldn't you have to call them a planet too? So if there's nine planets, then all of a sudden you would have a planet X or planet 10. Roman numeral 10 is an X, so you'd have planet X. And they just didn't want to deal with the backlash of discovering planet X. So if they demoted Pluto from being the ninth planet, then all of a sudden you couldn't have, by finding the next planet, you couldn't have planet X. A little quandary. Now, that's the kind of problems that astronomers have in their world. Isn't that bizarre? So anyway, no, but there's literally thousands of planets out there, and some of them relatively large. It's believed that there are some Jupiter-sized planets out there. Anyway, be that as it may, if you include Pluto as a planet, which I do, because I grew up with it, I like it being a planet, and there's no reason for denying its status as being a planet. It was discovered as a planet. Once a planet, always a planet. But then you have the issue that Jupiter and Saturn are not planets. A planet is this physical ball with an atmosphere, but a star is a little bit different. A star has a core, and it has a hydrogen, helium, and the primary components in the atmosphere. So Jupiter and Saturn have that, but that wouldn't be enough to make them small stars. It turns out that the atmospheres of Jupiter and Saturn are ignited. They are burning. They are burning fusion. And that was proven with the very first Voyager spacecraft that went by Jupiter. It's in the Science paper. It was published. And if that would have been years later, or a decade later, Brad Smith was the one that was the lead scientist on the Voyager mission at the time, wrote in the Science article, he said, there's a proton wind coming up off of Jupiter. A proton wind, just like coming off the sun. And they were still learning about the solar wind at that time as a phenomenon, a part of our sun, part of our sun's activity is this solar wind of protons. And Jupiter was doing it too. And Saturn was doing it too. And then after they discovered this, they just kind of hushed it up. It was like, oops, we can't talk about that. Let's just not talk about the fact that Jupiter has a proton wind coming up off of it, off the upper surface of the clouds. And so it just kind of like faded away. But you can still see that if you go back to the original Voyager articles in Science Magazine, which is the equivalent in Europe and in England. They have Nature, and in the United States, Science. As these would be considered top peer-reviewed journals for top-level science. And so, yeah, Brad Smith in there back in the early days of the Voyager publications of the Voyagers going by Jupiter and Saturn and the other outer planets, the Grand Tour, as it was called. Jupiter exhibited a proton wind coming up off of it. And of course, I saw that and it was like, okay, gloves are off. Jupiter is a star. And then when it got to Saturn, it was doing the same thing. And this is leading up to the point where I was predicting the smokes in Saturn rings and the moons. And the moons, and then the electrical effects that cause the spokes and other different effects in the rings of Saturn. That's what causes the gaps in the rings of Saturn. Okay, so just a little more discussion. So there are seven planets and two small stars in our solar system orbiting the sun, which is the central physical body in our solar system. So we have two small unlit stars, unlit in the visible spectrum. But if you look at them in the infrared and microwave spectrums, they are ablaze. You're looking around the great red spot of Jupiter, it's ablaze with fusion activity. So where does that come from? Well, a fusion fire is an electrical fire. The electrical discharges in the atmosphere kick off the fusion reaction. And so it's literally an electrical fire in a hydrogen-rich atmosphere. Hydrogen, helium, deuterium, and it's burning. But there was probably one point in Jupiter's history where it was actually a lit star. But this was probably not thousands of years ago, not hundreds of thousands of years ago, but potentially millions, or who knows? It's hard to guess how long ago Jupiter was actually a lit star in the visible spectrum. But it is currently and still is visible in the infrared spectrum. And you can see all of this activity going on in the clouds, and you can hear what are called whistlers. A whistler is the audio equivalent of a lightning bolt in the atmosphere of Jupiter. The sun has them. Jupiter has them. Venus has been known to have them. And Saturn, in the atmosphere of Saturn. Okay, so with that as a small just introduction, okay, in the next 20 minutes, I'm going to tell you the science behind the science behind the spokes in Saturn's rings. So just imagine Saturn. Everybody's familiar with Saturn, beautiful planet with the beautiful ring system in the plane of the planet. And so it's like Saturn is actually a little bit oblong. And that's because it spins so fast, the centrifugal force. Earth actually does this too. A lot of people don't know that there's a bulge in the Earth's equatorial region because of the spinning Earth. So the oceans actually bulge out a little bit. If the Earth stopped spinning, this would collapse and would totally change the ocean levels around the whole world. But Saturn has an atmosphere, and because it is spinning, that centrifugal force causes a bulge. And so Saturn, if you look at it from the side, looks a little bit kind of oblong. And so anyway, that's one issue. But let's go back to the idea of fusion in stars. So this is core to the entire issue, not to use a pun here, but the core fusion model of the sun is totally incorrect. The idea that fusion takes place under high pressure in the core of the sun, and that's what heats the sun, that model is completely wrong. In fact, this has been proven experimentally. when I was working with Russian scientists in the mid-1990s, they devised an ingenious experiment that can be done easily from planet Earth. You don't have to have satellites to do this. Very easy to do. You basically take an X-ray detector and a point X-ray detector, and you start out at the edge of the sun, and of course, don't do this at home. It's not something you would have equipment for at home. But you move the detector so it's measuring just at the very edge of the sun, at the outer limb of the sun. You measure the X-ray activity, and okay, that's what it is at the outer limb rim of the sun. Now you move it slightly across, and you scan across the central part of the sun. And so what happens as you take the second data point by scanning over just a little bit towards the center of the sun, that has all of the X-ray signatures that you just measured from the very outer edge and the new X-rays that come from a little bit deeper in the sun's core. So you subtract off the X-ray signature that you got at the very edge, and that leaves you with just the X-rays that come a little bit deeper. Now move the X-ray detector another pixel, another point inwards towards the center of the scanning scanning across the center line of the sun. And now you subtract off the two readings that you already have because they represent much higher up in the atmosphere. And you are left once again with the X-ray signature that is deeper in the sun. Now you scan just another pixel over, and now you subtract off the first three layers, the first three readings that you got, leaving you with the X-ray signature from deeper in the sun. And so you do this, you continue and you scan all the way across the sun and then come off the other side. And here's what they found. That as you go deeper down into the sun, instead of getting hotter, it actually gets cooler. And you actually hit a point where it stays, the temperature stays the same across a disk area in the sun. And then as you come out the other side, as you scan across the center line of the sun with your X-ray point detector, you reverse the same process and you end up with the full spectrum all the way across the center line of the sun. And so it turns out that the sun has a core. It does have a core, planetary type of core. But instead of being hotter than the atmosphere, indicating the core fusion model, it is actually cooler than the atmosphere. That means that the fusion is up in the atmosphere. And that's something that I had talked about in my scientific work. It had to be that way. And so the sun literally has a cooler core. And so the fusion activity is up in the atmosphere of the sun. And it actually gets hotter as you move out farther. And then you have the characteristic of charge. So part of the fusion process is the separation of charge. And so what happens is it's a separation of charge. It leaves the upper surface of the sun with a slightly positive charge. And then orbiting the sun are free electrons, like a superatom. So it's literally a positively charged solar surface surrounded by a sea of hypervelocity, relativistic electrons. And this is basically like a superatom. And by the way, this is the exact same physical construction as a lightning ball. And so lightning ball is a physical manifestation of fusion. And where do you see lightning balls? Typically when it's raining, the lightning comes from the lightning discharge initiates this. It breaks the water apart into hydrogen and oxygen, and this creates basically a superatom condition just like the sun. where you have a positive core, and then you have a sea of electrons orbiting. Okay, so anyway, that is the core, that is the atmospheric fusion model. And as a result, one of the big important parts of this model, which is in my work, it's all detailed in the papers that I've written, the proton wind coming off the surface of the sun. Now, what does it see? What does that proton wind see as it comes off the surface of the sun? It's looking out to a sea of electrons, and that's like having a metal grid negatively charged, and it accelerates the protons. And when the current connects magnetically with the magnetic field of the electron shield that's surrounding the sun, it breaks a hole in what is called the electrons that you see are called the solar corona. And by the way, when you have a solar eclipse, when the moon gets perfectly in front of your vision and blocks out the sunlight, you can see that solar corona surrounding the sun. And so anyway, that accelerates the protons. They connect magnetically and burrow a hole through that corona, and then they accelerate out into outer space and gives the overall end effect of protons leaving the sun, leaving the sun with a net negative charge relative to the rest of the solar system. Those protons continue outwards, sweeping dust and material out of the inner solar system and holding it back out beyond the orbit of Pluto in what I called the nebular ion cloud. And so when my original papers were published back in the early 1980s, I thought that the nebular ion cloud would be somewhere near Jupiter. But as the Voyager and primarily the Voyager spacecraft continued outwards, it became apparent that that nebular ion cloud was out beyond the orbit of Pluto, and probably about two times the orbit of Pluto. And that's where you see around other stars, you see that same nebular ion cloud. It's a cloud of dust and gas that illuminates. And by the way, that is what the Big Bang theorists are seeing when they see the microwave background radiation. They're seeing the 3-degree microwave signature of that dust cloud. That's all it is. It's not from the Big Bang. Okay, so that's basically a model of the sun. Now, this forms a capacitor with the sun being relatively negatively charged. And then this dust cloud out there with the proton wind supporting it provides the positive side of the capacitor. I call it the solar capacitor. Now, any object within that capacitor would be discharging it. And so all the planets, Jupiter, Saturn, etc., are all discharging this capacitor. And that's why when the planets align electrically, we get severe weather. It's in my weather work. That's just one of the attributes. And of course, this proton wind cannot keep going on forever, relieving the sun of positive charge. So there's a return current sheet, and that happens to be in the region of the solar system where Earth passes through in the month of August. That's why we have the peak hurricane season, the peak of the tornado season, the peak of the aurora season in the northern hemisphere in the month of August. And it tapers off into the future months and into the prior months, the previous months. Okay, so that's a view of the solar system. And one of the major contributors to Earth's weather is its discharge of this solar capacitor. Okay, so I'm going to stop there talking about the sun. It turns out that Jupiter and Saturn are doing the same thing. They have low levels of fusion in their atmosphere. And I could read my work. It'll go through all of the details and all the experiments that have been done to prove this. But the Jupiter and Saturn both are small unlit stars. They have an atmosphere that is exactly like the sun's. Jupiter was the original twin star pair. So originally, before all the other planets, moons in the solar system were captured, Jupiter and the Sun reigned as the primary members of the solar system. Okay, so let's get back to Saturn. Poor little Saturn out there. So you'd think that I maybe forgot about Saturn. Saturn is doing the same thing. So here's the situation. You have basically a small star, Saturn, a proton wind supported capacitor, and discharging going on between that capacitor and Saturn. But Saturn has the unique situation that it has this ring complex, and it looks like a record disc, the old-fashioned long play LP record discs of the, and I understand they have a comeback. People are now buying record discs and buying turntables, etc., and playing their music from the old style record discs. But anyway, that's what Saturn's rings look like. And in fact, when you put the pin down on a record, it slowly spirals inwards. And so it turns out that Saturn's rings are very much the same, that when you follow a particular ring, these are very fine lines, like record grooves, literally, they spiral inwards. Very, very slowly spiraling inwards to the point where they are consumed in the upper atmosphere of Saturn. Okay, so at any rate, now let's go to the. Now, this is what I had come to the conclusion in my work. This is like 1979, 1980. I'm working as an instructor at Cornell. I was hired as an instructor in the physics and mathematics department at Cornell University, Ithaca, New York. Wonderful, wonderful little town. Not many places as wonderful as Ithaca, New York. So anyway, I happen to have a teaching position there, so I'm in the library studying everything I can get my hands on: astronomy, astrophysics, space science. And I realize that Saturn's rings have some anomalies, and one of the main ones is that the ring edges, if you look at the inside of a ring and the outside of a ring, and this is observable using telescopes on Earth, this had been known for a long time, that the ring edge fading, if you go to the inside edge of a ring, it faded very gradually. And if you went to the outside edge of one of the rings of Saturn, it was very sharp and well defined. And one of the rings of Saturn had a kind of a fading only in one region, and it was symmetrical around the planet. And so I realized at Because I knew at this point that Saturn was a small star. It was a small fusion star with a proton wind, with discharging the solar capacitor, and that moons, small moons, which were not visible from Earth because they were small, they were beyond the viewing limit of telescopes currently at that time on planet Earth, that these moons would sweep out the material in causing the gaps in the rings. In this one particular one that only had a narrow region, in other words, like a spoke-like situation, that moon was in a tilted orbit. And so it only crossed through the plane of the rings at that spot, causing that symmetrical fading of the ring around Saturn. And so by doing that, I basically predicted that the moons would be electrically charged. The reason they're charged is the same reason comets are charged in the discharge of the solar capacitor, but in Saturn's capacitor, and would cause spokes. And so that's literally, you can read that in the paper that I published. By the way, the publication was called The Moon and the Planets at that time. I believe it later was called The Moon or the planets, I forget it, they changed the name, but at the time the journal name was called The Moon and the Planets, and it's called Saturn Sweeper Moons Predicted, and it has my name on it, J.M. McCanney, Department of Mathematics, Cornell University. So I predicted not only the spokes in the rings, but the moons that caused them. And all of this is later discovered. And the reason I'm talking about this is because recently in the news, the Hubble Space Telescope has been used to observe these spokes again. And they're saying that this is a mystery. Nobody understands what causes them. Isn't that incredible that nobody can figure out, in spite of the fact that I have a peer-reviewed published paper from that time frame when they were very first discovered and by the Voyager spacecraft, that peer-reviewed published paper, nobody just can seem to find that. Isn't that special? But now you are much more tuned to this. You have a better understanding of the spokes in Saturn's rings than the top scientists at NASA. Okay, I've got about 2 minutes left in this show, so I just want to wish you a merry, merry Christmas. I hope you had a wonderful Christmas and a happy new year. And so let's bring this new year in with a positive note. And remember that one of the things that I do, I have the best water filter products on the planet, or in the solar system even, I would venture to say. And you can find those on my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. And you can get an extra 5% discount on orders over $300 by using the coupon code JMCC. And now, in the last minute or so here, I want to talk about something that you'll be surprised that I talk about this, but coffee. The world is full of coffee drinkers. It's one of the top commodities in the entire world, next to energy, water. It ranks right up there. But at any rate, I am starting to promote premium specialty coffee and some sources that you can find on my webpage. So go to the jmccwaterfilters.com webpage. And this is in progress, so it's a work in progress, let's just put it that way. But you'll be able to find a link, and then soon there'll be a major webpage dedicated to this. But I'm just giving you a little forewarning. Probably within a day or so from the time this show airs, you'll be, or maybe even as this airs, I'm not sure the exact release time. But look for the coffee, Colombia Best Coffee. So thank you very much. Hope you had a great year. Looking forward to another wonderful year coming up. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.